and therefore tested, the, you see, the reason why Ford wants a general pardon is that as long as the trials go on, it's very hard to continue the cover-up. It's going to continue to be an embarrassment to Ford and an embarrassment to Nixon. And that's why he wants why he wanted to pardon the others as well. And that's why he suddenly talked about the poor draft dodgers and the people, the deserters. They was, in my opinion, using them as just a sentimental cover-up for the pardon of Nixon and the pardon of Haldeman and Ehrlichman. And Congress stopped him on that, but he may go further on it, because it's very hard to avoid trouble in the courts on the tapes agreement. And the tapes agreement is really more important than the pardon.
What would happen if Nixon died tomorrow? Would the tapes be destroyed, or would it be another, or could they exist for another 10 years? There was something you said that wasn't, that made that a little bit...
Under the tapes agreement...
Would you repeat the question?
Yeah. You're saying,
What would happen to the tapes if Nixon died tomorrow? There was something...
Oh, if Nixon dies tomorrow, the government is under obligation to destroy all the tapes. That is, by 1984, a wonderful date for all this, or if he dies sooner, by 1984, all tapes are to be destroyed. If he dies sooner, the government is obligated to destroy them sooner. And in addition, the day after the title passes to the government, under this gift, quotation marks, 5 years hence, on that day, Nixon has a right to destroy any and all tapes that he chooses. Those are the provisions on destruction of tapes.
What form of outrage do you think Ford will have to commit before Congress would be willing to censure him in this bill?
Before Congress what? Well, I don't know. Impeachment power was not something that was supposed to be used very often. A lot depends on what happens. I mean, I myself believe that there's a lot more hidden on those tapes. I think that one reason that Nixon made quite a few damaging tapes public is the reason that a defendant in a serious criminal trial will establish credibility by saying, look, I picked pockets, I stole chickens, I pinched waitresses' bottoms, but I never committed this murder. So he establishes credibility by lesser confession, as it were. I think that there are more damaging things there, and I think that Ford may yet be sorry that he didn't adopt a different policy. I think that new revelations in the documents and on the tapes, in other words, there may be more bombshells hidden there, and that might bring a censure vote. I must say, aside from the censure business, I do not think, with all due respect to Ford, that he has the capacity, the vision, the knowledge, the objectivity to break loose from the stale policies of the Nixon administration in respect to the economy and do something about the terrible financial crisis that's engulfing our country and the world. And I think it's very important for the Democrats to get themselves together and give us a new leadership 2 years hence.
Yeah, Mr. Stone, you've given us a lot of information. It's very enlightening. It's a little bit depressing.
But to what?
Tell us what you think the best course of action is for those of us who would facilitate the exposure of the truth.
Facilitate what?
The exposure of the truth.
Well, I think that I think you ought to.
I think they heard the question.
Oh, what could be done to force the exposure of the truth? One of your senators has joined with Senator Nelson and Senator Irwin in a bill to take title to these documents and tapes. Under Article 4 of the Constitution, the Congress has the sole power of disposal of government property. And the Congress can take this over as government property. And of course, that bill would have to be signed by, it's a bill, would have to be signed by the President and have to be passed over his veto if he vetoed it. That's one thing that can be done. But another thing is to write to your congressmen and senators to bring pressure on Jaworski to go ahead and indict the President and let him bring in the pardon as a plea and extenuation, and to ask Rodino to reopen the proceedings, to call the Attorney General, to call Becker, to call Buchan, to call Miller before the Senate Government Operations Committee under Chairman Irvin and the Judiciary Committee under Rodino. Let's get all the facts. Look, if it's possible for one reporter reading the documents of the White House to find out as much as I told you tonight, there must be a hell of a lot more to it. And there's no reason why they can't use their subpoena power and their to subpoena these officials and get the full story out. And then there'll be enough public indignation to get something done.
There hasn't been very much discussion as to Kissinger's involvement with the CIA in Chile. Do you have anything to say about that?
Well, Kissinger's a whole big subject by himself, and so is Chile. And so somebody asked me at a talk recently, what did I think of Kissinger's credibility? And I said he had the most marvelous credibility of anybody in Washington. the right believes him, the left believes him, the center believes him. A right-winger goes in the door of his office and comes out smiling. A left-winger goes in and comes out smiling. And a pacifist thinks that he shook his head when I preached pacifism. And Joe Alsop's in there preaching cataclysm and catastrophe and the end of the world. And Kissinger nods his head very sagely. He comes out satisfied. And he's just a man for all seasons. I think we cannot go on subsidizing and financing and excusing an institution devoted to burglary, bribery, and murder abroad for whatever we think involves our national interests and not have it poison the life of the Republic at home. We've already seen in Watergate that Nixon reached out to the CIA to help him in the dirty tricks at home. I mean, for Ford to say that he was defending freedom of the press, what could the President of the United States have said that does more harm to those brave men trying to maintain freedom of the press abroad than to cast the shadow over them of being the paid hirelings of the United States government? What a hell of a way to support the free press, to make them suspect, to make them look like tools and paid agents instead of honorable men. That's what he did. And look what we killed Mossadegh in Iran. We drove out Arbenz in Guatemala. Our hands bear the blood of the murder of Allende. What was Allende trying to do? Allende didn't violate freedom of the press. The military that took over violated freedom of the press. What was Allende trying to do? Allende was trying to bring about socialism with a human face, by constitutional methods, without terror, with freedom of discussion. This was his lonely crusade, and a very important crusade for the whole world. Not a crusade to establish a Stalinist-type dictatorship, but an effort with dealing with a very democratic people like the Chileans, with a great past, to bring about socialism without terror and without dictatorship. And that's what we overturned and put a dictatorship in its place, as we helped to put a dictatorship in Greece. Where were we when Papadopoulos wiped out freedom of the press in Greece? Where are we when the junta wipes out freedom of the press in Brazil or in Dominican Republic? Where were we in the days before Fidel Castro when Machado and Batista wiped out freedom of the press in Cuba?
certain arrangements made by them or by their secondary.
That was my surmise.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit more about what your surmise is? For example, what was the hurry to turn the tapes over to Mr. Nixon and to announce the pardon on the eve of primary elections, for example? How do you picture the...
Well, I don't know enough about it. I've had a lot of... Who knows? Nixon might have signed himself a pardon before he left office and had two witnesses, Rosemary Woods, let's say, and General Haig. And I'm serious. And if brought into court, he might waive that pardon. He might have said to Ford, look, I'll disgrace the whole party by using my own pardon unless you give me one. I don't know what went on. There are a lot of possibilities. We just ought to try to find out by subpoenaing some of these people and having them answer questions under oath before a Senate and the House committee.
Let's have one more question and then we'll call it.
I'll give them a few more. Okay. I can last as long as you can. I'm sorry. I didn't read that, and the thing is, the story is really complicated enough without having to worry about bug camels in Saudi Arabia.
You've watched Nixon for 25 years. Do you have any thoughts on his psyche? Was he a self-destructive individual?
Well, somebody said I've been watching Nixon for 25 years, and did I have any thoughts on his psyche? Was he self-destructive? I doubt if he has a psyche. at least not a psyche in the... I guess every human being has a soul. I shouldn't be so harsh. I'm very dubious of amateur psychoanalysis in politics. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychoanalyst. And I just don't know enough about it. Well, one reason why the press falls for Kissinger is that among all those plastic men out of J. Walter Thompson, those soap advertising Shakespeares, these plastic two-dimensional creatures, he's got a sense of humor. He chucks them under the chin. He makes jokes at his own expense. He's very clever. He's a marvelous performer. And it's a pleasure to watch him operate in that dull, deadly Nixon White House full of dopes. So the press falls for it. The press is very naive, and he's very clever. And I don't want to join in a blanket condemnation of Kissinger. I think that I hope that in the Middle East, in a very, very difficult situation, I think he's been very clever. I think all the cleverness with which he has managed to get all the reporters to like him in Washington. He's managed to, anybody that can kiss Sadat and Goldie Mayer at the same time is really quite a fellow. And maybe he can do something. History, like Providence, moves in wondrous, in strange ways, it's wondrous to perform. And it's a mistake to try to bring everybody and every whole series of complex events into one tight, neat little formula. I think he's done some good things.
Do you think a man as rich as Rockefeller should be vice president?
No.
Why?
Well, I guess maybe I really shouldn't say that. That really depends. I think I was wrong in that remark. The mere fact that a man has great wealth doesn't necessarily mean that he won't have sympathy or understanding for the... Huh?
What about Attica?
I don't like Attica. But well, I wasn't asked about Attica, I was asked about all his money. I do think the real problem is he represents the greatest oil fortune in the country and the greatest oil bank in the country. How can he, with the utmost, even with the utmost honorable effort, possibly divest himself of a point of view and a perspective, and a set of opinions and a set of views that are friendly to the oil trust and the oil cartel, and face to face with one of our biggest problems? It isn't a matter of his being a crook or putting his stock in escrow. You can't put his mind in escrow. And there have been wealthy men who have been mavericks. Franklin D. Roosevelt was pretty well off. As far back as the Gracchi in ancient Rome, wealthy men have led popular movements. It's happened many times before. Cyrus Eaton has been a multimillionaire, has been a force for peace and for liberalism in our country. So I don't think the fact that he has all that money necessarily militates against him, but I think his connections, his, the fact that he's really Mr. Oil in a very big way, and he can't help being it. And of course in Attica, I think he showed a lack of humanity and a lack of courage and a lack of leadership that was very, very revealing in a very terrible situation.
Could I ask you, why you think Nixon made the tapes to begin with, and if what may be on the tapes is keeping other people from wanting those tapes exposed, as well as Nixon himself?
I'm being asked if I know why Nixon made the tapes in the first place, and of course I don't know, and I'm really tired of surmising about it because I just don't know. And he had himself all rigged up, I mean, for his memoirs and his records, and I guess he thought nobody would know about it. I don't know, I just don't know.
You don't see any more sinister motive in making tapes of other people's conversations secretly?
Well, he couldn't use them for blackmail unless he disclosed them, I don't know. Look, there's enough sinister things about Richard Nixon without my thinking up new ones. Well, I think that a great deal of change can be brought about within the framework of the Constitution when enough people in this country wake up to the need for it. Well, again, and of course, the multinational corporations are one of the latest bogeymen. The fact is that when the people of this country want something, they get what they want. But if they don't give a damn, then the great corporations and the powers that be run the show. Look, in the Roosevelt period, just about 98% of the papers of this country were against Franklin D. Roosevelt. And when he proposed a simple thing as old age pensions and Social Security, they joined in the chorus that he was a red and this was communism and something that Lloyd George had done in 1905 and Bismarck had done in 1895, where they tried to sell it to the American people as communism. And despite all the anti-communist hysteria, it didn't work. It didn't work. It didn't work, despite the press and the media. People had enough sense and enough concern to know where their interests lie, and the judge a lot of malarkey, and he was reelected, and we got a lot of reforms, if enough people are awakened, if enough people have enough concern for others, we'll get things done again. There's no magic way to do it otherwise, because if they're not concerned, it doesn't matter what you change, what kind of a system you have. Well, come on Wednesday and we'll discuss that one. Really, that's another subject.
One more. This will be the last.
There's been so much discussion as to the decadence of the institution.
What's that?
There's been a lot of discussion, too much, to the decadence of the institution of the presidency.
The decadence of what?
The presidency.
The presidency. Is there anyone really capable of filling the shoes of that office?
The presidency.
Who might you suggest?
Presidency is not decadent. It's flourishing. That's the problem. It's growing. It's growing so powerful and so unwieldy. And so great, its power is so great. That's not decadence. It's the Congress that's decadent. What?
To society, to American society.
Oh, American society is not decadent. All human society is in a bad way, and there are a lot of things that need to be done, and we're going to get things done. And we're not decadent, we're not sick, we're not dying. Look around the world objectively, and we've got a pretty good country, and there's a lot of room for those of us that want change and are concerned to act and to motivate our fellow citizens and get things done and get crooks out of public office. It's there are not many places in the world where people like us can do as much as we can do in this country. It's still a pretty damn free country, pretty good from that point of view.